Welcome to The Wedding Edit, a wedding planning podcast for the modern couple.
Q&A with Kelly and Dana.
Q&A.
We're back here with another Q&A episode with all of your burning questions from our Instagram. We're very excited to tell you all the things, all the answers. They might not be the answers that you are looking for, but we will see. Yes. So thank you to anybody that wrote us on our Instagram or DM'd us, responded to our question box. We do this quite often. We're trying to answer all of the questions that you might have about planning a wedding, and we're here to give you some answers. So we'll just get straight into it. Our first question today, Kelly, is live band or DJ, which is the best for getting the party going?
So I think that is really going to be based on what band and what DJ you actually book.
Absolutely.
Because I have to say that I've at my own wedding, we had a DJ and everyone said, like, the dance floor went off all night. Mm-hmm. Everyone said afterwards it's the best dance floor, like wedding dance floor they've been on. And So, you know, we had like that experience. But I've also been to a wedding recently where they had a live band and the band was amazing and the whole the dance floor was pumping. So I think that doesn't really answer the question, does it?
It's a hard one though, because like I've seen like an acoustic duo, like just acoustic guitar and a singer and like doing Mr. Brightside, which isn't like the most upbeat song anyway, and dance floor going off.
Yeah, it so, depends on the actual musicians and the people that you book.
Yeah, they have to have a good vibe.
They have to. You kind of need, I think you need to go with word of mouth, reviews.
Yeah, or if you've seen them at a wedding as well.
Yeah, if you've seen them. Like also if you're going to book the cheapest band, you kind of get what you pay for.
Yeah.
If you're going to book the cheapest DJ, you might, I'm not saying it's about price, but you kind of get what you pay for. So
I think it's really good to ask them about how they do their work as well, like what kind of style do they do? Do they take requests? Like things like that, because if you're a really great band, you are going to know what, you know, your audience is looking for, what people love to dance to, that kind of a thing. And sometimes bands, I think, also they can make like a really terrible song amazing.
They can.
Yeah, you really can. Yeah. There is a huge element to this where it is actually about just letting your vendors do what your vendors do best.
Trust them. Yeah. If you dictate and send your band or DJ a list in order of what you want played and when you want it played, chances are that maybe your dance floor will be a little bit of a flop because you're not the expert on how to get a dance floor going at a wedding. Sure. Whereas, you know, DJs that are experienced, they know what songs are going to bring the crowd to the dance floor. So you do have to trust and try not to control every element, I think. But honestly, if I was going to have my wedding again, like now, I think I would totally do like a live band.
Yeah.
Even though our DJ got the dance floor going, I think it's a personal thing. Like if you as a couple are really into live music, then have a live band or have like a duo or something before and then have a DJ later. But just make sure you book the right band.
Yeah.
You know.
And there's lots of acoustic duos now that you can get that also offer like a duo for your ceremony and then a DJ later on.
Yeah, there is.
And that's even if you want to do like live band kind of music for your first dance, you can do that. That's an option and still have a DJ at like 9 p.m. or whatever.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And So I don't know if, you know, I don't know if there's a right or wrong really. I think it's if you're going to book one, it's like preference. A DJ or a band, just book a really great DJ or a really great band. next question that you guys asked, which is one that I get asked quite a lot, how much time should we allow between our ceremony and reception?
10 hours. How, and you can have like a nap. No.
I know. Well, yeah.
No. This can vary so much. I'm thinking about it with like my photographer brain, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah, of
course. So because you've got like half an hour for your ceremony, like roughly 15 minutes for like hugs and congratulations. You might need like an extra 5 or 10 minutes if you're having a group photo. Then roughly it's like 30 minutes for your family photos. And then you want to have at least 45 minutes if you're not having sunset photos, just for portraits.
So that's like basically your, like what you're saying is ceremony half an hour, maybe half an hour-ish for like hugs and, you know, like group shot and stuff like that. And then – and also you've got to allow that – always allow that the ceremony is going to start late.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that 2 hours is a good time, to be honest, for there to be enough of a buffer.
Including travel time if it's at a different location.
Not including travel time. So if you – so, for example, if you were going to have your portrait photos off site from where you've had your ceremony.
Yeah. So that then, if your photographer's suggested a location nearby.
Then you need to add that in as well. And then if the reception is in a different location, you need to add that in as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like if you're having a 3 o'clock ceremony and your reception's maybe a 20-minute drive away and then you're having some photos with the bridal party at the ceremony location, but then your photographer wants to take you off site somewhere for 10 minutes away,
mm-hmm.
I suppose you'd probably got to allow that you guys won't be back at the reception until 5:36 for a 3 o'clock ceremony.
Oh,
is that like
trying to do the maths in my head?
I was just like, so 3 till 4, and then it'll be like family photos till 4:30.
Yeah.
And then it'll be, you know, 4:30 till 6. So yeah, realistically, you as a couple and wedding party, you're not probably going to get to the reception location till around 6.
Yeah. And I think too as well, like I think it's really good to schedule in just like 15, 20 minutes where you can go somewhere and have a breather with your bridal party.
Yeah.
Have something to eat before you come into the reception, that kind of a thing. Because like chances are when you do get announced into your reception, everything, everybody's going to be like wanting to talk to you and tell you how beautiful your wedding is and how beautiful you look and, you know, all of that. And there's people that haven't seen each other for such a long time. So there's just like a lot of people want your attention.
Yeah.
And I think that it's good for your peace of mind as well to have some alone time as well as to have something to eat. You don't want anyone fainting, that kind of a thing. So
yeah, so you probably won't get introduced into the reception if that's what you're doing, if you're having a formal introduction till 6:30 or quarter past 6 or something.
I think it depends. Like you don't want your guests also to wait too long between when they've seen you at the ceremony to when they're going to see you at the reception.
Yeah.
And I guess like a big thing that Doug and I have for like our business, Will & Co. Photography, is just that we want you to be able to have everything that is most important to you on your day. So most of the couples that book us don't want to be away from their guests and their family for very long at all. So we make sure that we are getting all of their photos, like their family photos and their portrait photos and their bridal party photos, done within such a small amount of time so that they can have as much time as possible to be able to breathe, have space, be relaxed and calm and really just spend time with their family and friends and have it be what they have always wanted it to be about.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's
so important.
Yeah. I mean, we've had couples in the past that have given us like 3 hours or 4 hours and it's been like a huge amount of time. And I mean, it is different if, you know, you're having your, say if your venue's at like Sunnybrae, which is like Regency Park, and then you wanting to have all of your portraits in the city, which is like 20 minutes away. So then you go into the city and, you know, maybe you've got like 3 or 4 hours. We've had this one time before and we just went to a bar and the wedding party had lunch, which was lovely. We kind of just give them space when they're doing that, just so they can, chill, enjoy their time, step back. We'll take photos if we see some things going on and everything, but you don't really want to take photos on people eating as well. But I think that, you don't want to have too much time on your hands either, and you don't want to have too much of a gap.
Too much of a lull in the day.
Yeah.
You want to keep going with the momentum, but.
Yeah.
But, and also another factor to consider is if you're having first look photos, you don't need as much time.
That's right.
So a first look is when obviously you guys as a couple see each other before the ceremony and have your portrait photos beforehand.
Yeah, and that can sometimes alleviate some problems, which is good.
Yeah, so if you're wanting to get straight into the party, if you're the type of couple that want to get straight into it after the ceremony, first look is a great option, which I think we've talked about before. But, so there's not really a right or wrong, but definitely if you're not sure how much time to allow between, talk to your photographer, talk to your wedding venue wedding planner.
Absolutely.
Like just those are the kind of key people that you need to speak to, and your caterer, which might just be your venue.
Yeah. Yeah, they're the three people that you would speak to just about your timeline in general, and they will give you really good guidance. And if you are having trouble with the fact that you've been given like three timelines from three different people, just talk to your photographer. They'll be really chill. They'll pull it together for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be fine. So our next question is, are guest books necessary?
No. I'm so over guest books. Like, I know that sounds so harsh, but I think it's just I asked one of my brides last year, are you having a guest book? And she was like, is it 2015? That was her response. And I was like, look, I'm only asking because I don't want to be rude and assume you're not having one. But, look, there's no right or wrong. Again, like we always say.
I think it depends on the audience, but it is preference.
you've got to realize that, you know, people get drunk. People are there to have a good time.
Yeah.
Your guest book will get forgotten by a lot of people.
Yeah, it will. Absolutely.
There will be some people that will write in it, but, you know, it's one of those things that I don't think you actually need.
No.
And they're kind of an eyesore sometimes on the gift table.
I think so too, like, it's a little bit of double handling. If you think about it, those that want to write something to you are going to write it in a card.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. That's right.
Why then write, you know, something else again in a guest book? Like if that was me, I would probably write the same thing that I wrote in the wedding card in the guest book because I'd be like, oh, I have no idea what to write.
And usually you're like a little bit tipsy at that point and you're sort of like, oh, I've got to write in the guest book. Like it's another task that you need to do as a guest.
Yeah.
Which I think if you're having a photo booth or something and you want people to stick photos in something, then it kind of would make sense to have a book that people can write a message in.
Yeah.
But I just think it's not really needed and it is a bit wasteful now in this day and age of sustainability and all that sort of thing. Like you said, people are going to give you a card. They're going to write something nice in a card. So it's personal preference again, like everything. Like we're not saying it's wrong to have a guest book.
No.
But it's not necessary to answer.
I don't think
the
I've
question.
Even read ours. Like I can't remember if we had – I remember we had one at our engagement party and I think that because hardly anybody wrote in it, we reused it for our wedding.
Yeah.
But I have no idea where it even is or if I just chucked it out because maybe like three people were in there. But I don't know. But, I just like I've kept all of our cards from our engagement and our wedding and I look back on those maybe like once every 10 years. It hasn't been 10 years yet. But I'll look at it again soon, I'm sure.
Yeah, definitely. So another question that we have had is what trends are we seeing for 2022, 2023 weddings? Mm-hmm. So what are you seeing, Dana?
Oh, I'm seeing couples just living their best lives, doing whatever they want to do.
Yeah. Well, it has been a tumultuous couple of years leading up to now. So I think people are just so happy that they can
but they're like,
have their wedding, have a dance floor.
Yeah. I think people are really thinking about what's important to them.
Yeah.
Which is lovely.
Yeah. I'm seeing a lot of color. Like if you're talking about styling trends,
makes me want to get married again. All the color that I've seen, it's so beautiful.
I'm seeing a lot of kind of daring color palettes where people, they want to put colors together that, you know, you wouldn't normally put together.
Like red and pink.
Yeah. Well, actually red and pink is,
it looks really good.
I did a wedding last year with a bit of red and pink. But, yeah, like, you know, I'm seeing a lot of bold orange and blue and, like, you know, a few years ago people were not putting blue in their wedding color palette. No. Like even I would have cringed at that, you know.
Yeah.
So lots of purple, light. I think there's the Pantone color of the year for 2022 is like a lilac-y kind of color. I can't remember what it's called. Don't judge me.
Seeing lots of waves as well. Like just and interesting textures.
Scalloped kind of designs on stationery. That's really popular. I think last year and the year before it was all about arches, arch menus and arch arbors and arch everything. And now it's sort of moving into like interesting shapes, like, the waves and the scalloped kind of look. I don't know what other, like lots of interesting shaped candles, twisted kind of candles and
sustainability and environmentally friendly. That's,
weddings.
Yeah, absolutely.
People are really conscious of not wasting things.
Absolutely. And like I think reusing things or really rethinking plastic, thank goodness that has finally happened.
I know.
Because, like one-use plastic just it has no place at a wedding.
No, well, it doesn't have a place anywhere really, in my opinion. No, people are – it's really nice to see people are more conscious of sustainability and I think you know, another thing that kind of ties in with that is even just like using local and seasonal kind of flowers as well. Like, you know, there are still couples that are happy to that want a certain flower that's not in season and they'll pay more for that. And a lot of people don't realize that what comes with that is it's getting shipped from overseas. So, you know, it's not great for the environment when you're shipping, like you literally like have flowers being flown in from another country. So it's, you know, I'm seeing a lot of couples actually saying, you know, oh, I didn't realize that flower wasn't in season then. So, like, you know, I trust my florist to find something that's in season that we'll still get the same look. So I'm seeing people a little bit less worried about I have to have this flower or I have to have this, like just, you know, trusting the process and caring a little bit more about their impact on the environment, which is really nice.
Yeah. So I think we're seeing a lot more like intimate kind of style weddings, which is lovely. Again, like coming down to like what is really important to couples, like, and having their most favorite people there and maybe spoiling them a bit more or having a bit more of a low-key wedding where that it is a bit more decadent with what they specifically want but less guests, which is lovely.
Yeah, and like spending more on those finer details and having that beautiful premium table setting but just having less guests there because you don't need to invite 100 people if you don't want to invite 100 people.
And then they're able to spend more quality time with those people as well. And I feel like you would just really experience your wedding day a lot more, like you're there in the moment and you're having quality conversations rather than, you know, going around and trying to talk to 100 people and like say hello, thank you for coming to my wedding. Like so.
And weekday weddings is a thing now. Like, I mean, like we've said before that a Friday wedding was a bit of an anomaly a few years ago. Friday weddings are now like the new Saturday. And, you know, I'm seeing Thursday weddings. I've had inquiries for Wednesday weddings. I've seen even interstate, like in Melbourne, there's so many like Monday and Tuesday weddings. I don't know if you've noticed that, but, yeah, I've just when I'm on scrolling on socials and that, I've noticed a lot of like photographers or people that I follow interstate are having – randomly doing weddings on like Mondays and Tuesdays.
Yeah, really good, especially if you have like a set month that you want to get married in and maybe you're having a shorter engagement. So you might want to have that better weather, but it's hard because you can't, like people are booked out, you know, two years in advance or whatever. But then I think also as well, if a specific date is really important to a couple, then that's still an option for them. They don't have to wait 4 years for it to be that specific day or whatever it is.
Yeah, and like if you've got a set photographer, a set celebrant or person that you really want to work with but you want to get married in March and that's 8 months away and they're all booked out, there's no reason why you couldn't look at a weekday. I think people worry a lot about like, oh, it's inconvenient. It's an inconvenience for our guests. And it's like if you give people enough notice, if they really want to be at your wedding, they will have the day off work. Like, come on, it's not, you know, it's one day and
– everyone's looking for excuse.
Yeah, and also if they don't want to come, then maybe you don't want them there. if they're annoyed at you for having a Wednesday wedding, maybe you shouldn't have invited them.
So our next question, Kelly, is backup weather plan options like hot, wet or windy weather for an outdoor wedding. Like what? You're a stylist and I know that you like are an organizer.
All about backup plans.
Yes, you totally are. So who would we talk to?
I love this question. I love that someone asked this because it's the one thing that I talk to all my couples about is – you know, if you're having an outdoor wedding, even if it's in summer, I've done weddings where it has rained all day in February and November. I've had thunderstorms in December. So, you know, I think it's – I know that not everyone has the money to kind of like book in a marquee as a backup because, you know, often you have to pay 25% deposit on that marquee and then if you don't end up using it, you forfeit that. You know, but what I would suggest is if you are having an outdoor wedding, even if it's in summer, you need to have a backup plan. So you need to either have a marquee booked in and realize that you will lose that deposit if you decide the week of your wedding that the weather looks beautiful and you don't want the marquee, then you've kind of got to come to terms with the fact that, well, we're going to lose whatever we've paid. But I think the important thing in that is to read the terms and conditions of the supplier before you book it. So don't just go and book any marquee. Make sure you ask the questions of the supplier, like what happens if we cancel the marquee 5 days out, and realize that you're not going to know what the weather's going to be like until that close to your wedding.
Yeah.
Often these suppliers have in their terms, you know, you can cancel it up to 21 days prior and you won't lose anything. And you're not going to know the weather 21 days before your wedding.
Yeah.
So, like, what's the point? So you've really got to factor in the fact that if you do have a backup plan, you're probably not going to really implement it or ditch it until 3 to 5 days before.
Yeah.
I think if it's going to be hot or if it's there's a risk that it's going to be hot, like if you're having a wedding in summer, you know, there's the risk of thunderstorms, but there's also the risk of probably more of a risk of really, really hot weather. So I think umbrellas, you know, making sure you've just got plenty of water for guests. You know, you can, I think you can hire big fans and things like that. They're kind of ugly, but.
Also I think considering the time of day that you're getting married as well. Like, for example, if it was like February and you're going to get, you're having your ceremony at 2 o'clock or whatever, if you can move that because you're not having, you know, if you are not having those extra things to help call people down or whatever, like that kind of a thing. But also definitely, if you definitely have to stick to the time and it is outside and there's no shade, you have to be on time, honestly. You have to be on time because otherwise you've got guests and stuff that are going to be out in that sun. So sometimes it might be good to even have them in like a secondary location like that or near the spot that has shade just so that they can, you know, be cool enough.
Yes, and factor in if you're going to have umbrellas, you need to factor in wind because there is absolutely no point in having umbrellas if your location is notorious for being really windy.
Yeah.
Because they'll just blow over and either injure someone or just be useless. So there's not really many umbrellas you can get that are wind resistant. it's almost impossible if it's really windy. So I think it's always important to kind of look at the historical weather data of that area and also speak to your venue or the person running, you know, the show from that location and just find out, you know, does it get really windy here? Do people ask them, you know, they're the experts. What do people often do as a backup? But, yeah, it's definitely a really good question.
Yeah.
Something that you need to consider.
Oh, absolutely. I think also considering – like if it's outdoors and it might be cold.
Yeah, heaters.
So, yeah.
Yep. Yep, hiring in heaters.
Even having like a basket of blankets.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's good to have, yeah. Thanks so much for listening to this Q&A episode with Kelly and Dana. We hope that you've enjoyed it and found it really, really helpful. We would love to hear more from you on our Instagram if you would like to DM us or reply to our stories and tell us any questions that you would like to hear us answer on our podcast. We would absolutely love to do that for you.
We would. And if you found this episode useful or you know someone who's getting married who might benefit from listening to our podcast, we would love for you to share it with a friend. Also, if you found this episode useful or you're enjoying listening to our podcast, we would love you to give us a star rating or even better, write us a review through Spotify or Apple Podcasts. We would be so appreciative.